Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor, and with me I have Megs and I have Josh.
Hello.
Hola.
So before I get into my bathroom facts, that's what I've decided to call what I provide before these movies, bathroom facts.
Can we call it a brown moment?
If you want to, you can.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Sure. It's been 1 year since we've been doing this.
One whole year?
Yeah, one whole year.
One whole year.
Actually, a little bit longer, but I just now got around to saying we did 1 year. We made it 1 year.
We made it.
Yep.
We did it.
Yep.
Yahoo. Right there, we put in, looks like we made it.
Yeah. So thank you all for who decided to listen to us for a year or more. Thank
Merci you. Beaucoup.
My bathroom facts for this are
brown moment,
or the brown moment is just the year 1992.
Ooh, I was 12 years old.
Ooh, I
graduated
10.
From high school.
Nice. Okay.
That's my graduating year.
Did you come loud?
Oh, you're so clever.
So I did, one thing I wanted to do was just go over some facts. One being what happened on this day in 1992, May 15th, the release date of this movie. I don't know what it means because they're bathroom facts. They're just there for you to do your own research later. May 15th, the Collective Security Treaty Organization is established by 6 post-Soviet states belonging to the Commonwealth of Independent States. Yep, that was the one boring fact I wanted to get to.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. Right. Yes, yeah.
The whole world is a better place because you gave that brown moment.
In 1992, a new Japanese word was coined after George H.W. Bush publicly vomited on the Prime Minister of Japan. That word is, I hope I get it right, Bushusuru.
Oh, I like that.
It means to do the Bush thing or to vomit in public. Yeah.
As a bartender, I'm going to use that. Bushusuru!
The most famous person in America at the time was Kevin Costner. More or less. The price of a CD, a compact disc, was $11.98.
Yeah.
The cost of a daily newspaper, you know, what everybody read before phones, 25 cents. Yep. And Skippy peanut butter, 64-ounce jar.
99 cents.
Nope. $5.99.
Really?
Yeah, 64 ounce. It's big.
The big ones. Okay.
Big jug.
I still wasn't doing my own grocery shopping, or
neither was I.
We had the newspaper delivered to the house. I have no idea what my mother paid for it. This was 1 week before I graduated high school.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool.
Today, yes.
I guess the most funny, the funny late night host at the time was Johnny Carson. Like, I had no idea.
That was
like,
right around his retirement.
What about Pat Sajak?
They might be there. This may be opinion.
Or just
only wanted to include their pick, which was Johnny Carson.
Did Ed McMahon bring the thunder to that,
funny,
though?
Pat Sajak got canceled. It wasn't a very funny
What about Ed McMahon? Did he, like, bring the thunder to that?
He brought the thunder.
Yeah, he's like, it's Johnny over here, big dick motherfucker.
Laugh. Yes. He was the greatest sidekick of all time.
Yeah, I wasn't watching this. I thought Johnny Carson died in like the 80s.
No.
And it wasn't until like, I don't know, maybe sometime in the 2010s when I learned that he did comedy up until like this time. I was like, wow, I don't remember, but it makes sense. I wasn't ever watching late night television.
The 90s was the end of a lot of that, like, comedy guys. You had like what's his name?
Jay Leno. Or the end?
Leno was the beginning. He took over
for
him. But it was... No, that era of group.
Yeah.
It was like... Oh, what's his name? The Nutty Professor.
Oh, Eddie Murphy.
Jerry Lewis.
Oh.
The telethons.
That was like... This was Jerry Lewis's like kind of like... It was the end of his career for the most part. Even Mel Brooks was starting to get old. And, you know, he wasn't as, you know... he had a few things after this, I want to say, but 92 was kind of that mark where it was a changing of the guard to a point, you know?
I mean, that's kind of a different generation, though. I mean, they're
that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Like, Johnny, their greatest generation people, Mel Brooks is Mel Brooks is probably like 10 years younger than they are.
Yeah.
I think he's the start of the silent generation. I don't think he's part of the greatest generation.
I kind of lump them together for the most part, though, because they're not so far apart. Rat Pack, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Mel Brooks is part of the greatest generation.
He just lived longer than most of them.
He's still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why I thought maybe he was more of, like, the early silent generation.
Yeah, it's because he sleeps in a big pile of money.
Yeah.
And it's not a Jew joke, because I don't do that.
Yeah.
Some top 10 baby names of 1992?
Ooh, let me throw one out there. Let's see. I'm going to say... Karen.
Nicholas.
I've met every single one of these names on here.
I'm trying to think of, because people I know were starting to have children at this time.
And
there were like Nicholases. Yeah, like
it may have been a popular name, but from this website it's not on there. I don't know where they're pulling this from. These are bathroom facts. These are not.
Yeah. Let's have it.
So Ashley, Jessica, Amanda, Brittany, Sarah, Michael, Chris, Topher, Matthew, Joshua, Andrew. I've met every single one of them.
My cousin had an Ashley in 1991 or 1990. So yeah, that does make sense.
The fashion icon sex symbol at the time. Who do you think it was?
Fashion icon?
Sex symbol, you know.
Kate Moss.
I think she was up there.
Cindy Crawford.
Ooh, I think maybe a little early. Elle McPherson.
Okay.
92. And then on the male side, who do you think was like heartthrobs of like 92?
Fabio.
Yep, yeah, he's in there.
Johnny Depp.
Antonio really? Sabato.
Sabato's in there. Yep. You got two of the three.
And Lorenzo Lamas.
Nope.
Oh. Patrick Swayze.
Just a model or
I think maybe an actor at this point too. Singer.
Oh,
George Michael.
Nope.
No, it's Ricky Martin.
No.
Damn it.
Mark Wahlberg.
Mark. Well, he was a model and he was a rapper.
Maybe I was wrong. I'm sorry if I was incorrect. I didn't know he modeled. I had no idea.
He was a Calvin Klein model. That's how he became famous. He was on all of the billboards wearing underpants. That's how he made his big. He has a third dimple just like Theo.
Like our friend.
There's a couple of good quotes from 1992. This one sums it up pretty well. Can we all just get along?
What's his name?
Rodney King. Yep. Time Magazine's Man of the Year.
What year? Of the year?
92.
Kevin Costner.
No.
Damn it.
I don't know.
Bill Clinton.
Oh gosh, I was thinking he was a little bit later.
Nope. It was 92 when he got elected. Wow. 92 would have been his first year.
I always think of him as a little bit later.
So some scandals. Woody Allen left his long-term partner Mia Farrow after she discovered his secret affair with her adopted daughter
Sunye.
Amy Fisher shot the wife of her lover Joey Buttafuoco. Mary Jo Buttafuoco in the face. So. Amy Fisher shot Mary Jo Buttafuoco in
the
face.
Made three TV movies.
They certainly
did. One starring
did.
Drew Barrymore, one starring Alyssa Milano, and one starring some other chick.
And then Booty Shakin' Dancin' entered the mainstream with Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back. So this was the year when booty ass shaking was prevalent. It became a thing. Sam Kinison died in 92.
Did he?
That's right. Yeah.
I remember when he died. I didn't realize adult me didn't realize it was 92.
Yeah.
Like, I remember he used to do the Trails commercials.
Nice.
Or the local Phoenix ones.
Nice. That's cool.
I remember from MTV. That was my, like, dive into him.
Yeah, he would be on a lot of like late night things that I would see. But I wasn't a fan of his at all. He was annoying. But when he died, it was very shocking, because when you're a kid and somebody you see on TV a lot dies, it's very who isn't an elderly person dying of natural causes, you're kind of like, oh. And especially the way he died, he was in that car accident. He got up and he was walking around and he was talking to people, and then he died. So that was very
hemorrhaged.
It was very shocking. Yeah.
And then I'll leave off. There's a couple more, but I just wanted to leave off with this one because it's relevant to what we're doing here. The best film Oscar winner.
Dances with Wolves?
Kevin Costner.
I don't know what year it was.
92.
No, I don't know what year.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
No.
Oh, Oscar.
And then it was film.
What was the movie?
The Silence of the Lambs.
Oh.
Okay.
Yep.
That's easy. Hopkins.
Yeah. I don't remember what year's movie. I used to be so good at what year's movies came out, but I saw Silence of the Lambs.
Did Jodie win for Best Actress too?
I am not sure. I am not sure. It didn't go that far. It just did
it
best
has
film.
To be. That movie like destroyed the Oscars that for something was, of that nature
for,
too.
For a horror film, because those movies didn't usually
for like an action movie. Horror, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it at Town and Country on a Friday night.
Nice.
I did not like going inside by myself.
I saw that years later.
My boyfriend dropped me off, and I did not want to go.
It was a creepy theater. That's why they turned it into a gym.
I love that theater. I saw a Sniper there, too. I saw Ghostbusters there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of movies. I
saw Forrest Gump there.
I saw Forrest Gump at home. But those were my, that was my Brown moment.
It was delightful.
I like that better, yeah.
What is the amateur movie review hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we used to provide us with a movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. All right. So the movie that we're reviewing is The Vagrant. The writer is Richard Jefferies. The director is Chris Wallace. The actors are Bill Paxton, Marshall Bell, Michael Ironside. Release date was May 15th, 1992. The runtime was 91 minutes. Megs, why this movie?
Well, I'll tell you.
Why this nuts, wacky-ass movie?
Oh, there's one reason, and it's got three names.
Well, I love the great, late Wild Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Number two, though, it was filmed here in Phoenix.
Yes.
It was filmed a little over a mile from my house. My boyfriend worked at the Safeway back then, and he did the bag. He was a bag boy, and he took all the groceries out to the crew who was getting groceries for the cast, and he was the one who told that's how I found out they were making a movie in that neighborhood. I was very excited about it, and I couldn't wait for it to be released.
Yeah.
I did not see it at the theater. I don't think it had a theatrical
release.
I don't
think so either.
And if it did have a theatrical release, I did not know about it. I saw it on video, a VHS tape, when it came out, and I thought it was terrible. Of course, I was still young at the time.
Very.
And I didn't have my I did have an interesting taste in movie, but this one just didn't do it for me. Watching it again this last weekend, I really enjoyed it. I found it to be quite funny and dark.
It was hilarious.
And I like seeing the neighborhood that I ride my bike around in, and I've ridden by this house, of course, and this vacant lot many times. But I thought it was cute. I liked it. And it was a great cast. Marshall Bell is amazing in this movie.
Yeah. I had to look at it. I had to Google his roles and where he was in. It's like, oh, okay, funny that he shows up in another movie with Michael Ironside, albeit very briefly.
They're best
very
friends.
Briefly. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, they're very good friends.
But that guy threw me off. Like, his acting just was so weird. It was disgusting. I was like, I don't like the way that you know.
You did not like it.
No, it was. If that's what he was going
for,
he got it.
Yeah, he was gross. But he is such a great character actor.
I think there are points in this movie that this movie didn't know what it was trying to be, or if it was, it just felt too jaunty. It didn't seem well. Like,
I would definitely agree with that. And I think I appreciated it more now. I think that's what bothered me the most about it when I was younger, because I wanted it to go one way or the other. Now I just don't care sometimes. It's like, whatever, do whatever you want. But I found Bill Paxton to be quite green, even though he had been working a long time.
Yeah.
By this time, yeah, he had already done Near Dark. He'd already done, you know, a lot of his smaller roles, but his very, I like his smaller roles in Streets of Fire and Terminator and things like that. You know, he'd been around for a while.
Hey, he's the bad guy in Twins.
Yeah. He's always the bad guy. Marshall Bell's always the bad guy. But I thought that Bill Paxton was, I think it was weird for him to play a leading role. I think he was a little uncomfortable with it.
Sure. Well, it very much looked like it. Like, it looked like he was uncomfortable with it. Like,
yeah.
Unsure of how to approach it. Like, I don't know how to act, but it looked very, you could tell it was forced. It didn't seem natural. None of it seemed natural.
I'll say
this is maybe your precursor, but he does play a man with a quateau.
Yes, he does. Yeah, but I really enjoyed that whomever put their like comedy spin on it, or whoever punched up, it just feels like somebody from the Brooks Film side was stepping in and like, here, we're gonna make some funny parts here, and like the whole work at like relationship with his boss,
fucking ridiculous.
Like that
dude,
seemed like something out of like the 60s or like. A trope from the 60s.
It was super common in the 80s to have that weird, you know, you even saw it in like 9 to 5. You always had that weird, the mean old boss who was, you know, mean to the poor. They even brought it back for Horrible Bosses. You know, the Kevin Spacey played that up really well.
The trope is there, will be there, will continue to be in movies.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, just the little things like the snipers, cutting the holes but not cutting eye holes.
Sure, yes.
But still looking through. You know,
looking through their scopes.
Yeah, they're using
scopes.
Fence. Yeah, straight at the fence. Like I didn't notice that when I was younger, but I thought it was quite funny.
Sure. the mine choice at the end of the movie is like, really? which I want to go to, I want to find that place, wherever it is.
Yeah. I want to know who came up with the chair killing scene.
Yes, that was like, great.
Well, hey, what do we kill Ironside? Hey, let's use a chair.
Mm-hmm.
We got a chair here. That's going to go through human flesh really easily.
Easily.
Yeah.
So
chairs.
Easy.
You're always seeing these stabbing victims with the chairs, the chair legs falling on them and killing them instantly. That bothered me a little bit. I was like, well, I don't think so.
Yeah. I had fun. I had fun watching it. It was fun. There were some good laugh points where it was just ridiculous slapstick stuff. Like, who decided to do this? It's like, yeah, right now we're just going to do some slapstick shit. It's going to be hilarious. Like, they just died, though. Like, they're dead.
I like that Bill Paxton was there long enough for his hair to blonde and turn into a mullet.
Yes. It's like, really? Yeah. Really? That's how you're going to tell us how long time has passed?
Yeah, no, he didn't put on glasses to tell us time had passed. He got a mullet.
He took them off.
Yeah, he took them off. Uh-huh. He got some blonde hair, and he got a mullet.
Yeah. This was a crazy nuts whack movie that was just hilarious out of nowhere. Well, you want to get into this spoiler filled review?
I think we should.
All right. This wacky movie begins with some Danny Elfman-esque music. There's a one-take wide shot of the interior of some ambiguous business company. The camera eventually, at first I thought it was like newspaper, just because of how open it was. I was like, man, what are they saying? Is this a fucking newspaper? Is he a writer? they're still ambiguous about it. He just analyzes shit.
Yeah.
But the camera eventually stops on Graham Krakowski, played by Bill Paxton. And Graham is diligently working until he remembers the real estate listings that he had hidden under his pile of folders. He searches through the listings, circling some or writing notes next to the amounts. Just for a quick comparison, some houses used to cost $60,000. Soon he finds a potential house as a shot crossfades to the exterior shot of the house in the neighborhood where it is located. The neighborhood is busy when the realtor with Graham arrive to look at the house. And as you can see, Mr. Krakowski, it's very conveniently located for a young business person like yourself. This was the line. I was like, who the fuck? No.
That's sales right there, okay?
I'm sure, sure.
Because no matter what you say, they're like, it is kind of close to work.
Sure. The realtor shows Graham around, making some campy commentary about the house. And as Graham inspects the second floor bathroom of his maybe future home, he finds a book called The Animal Within by Dr. Stanley Memelreich. He is surprised by the realtor, who wants to know what he thinks of the house. He doesn't like the house. So the realtor surprises me by forcefully coming on to Graham and making him buy the house. Then as most people do, he decides to buy the house after this weird fucking sex situation. He didn't even get to have sex. He's like, didn't even get the bigger payoff.
That's definitely not how the pornos I watch go.
Not those documentaries.
No,
that's the great Colleen Camp in that scene.
No, I briefly read what she had done.
She's a Clue. She's Babette.
Oh, that's right.
She's the French maid.
Okay.
That's her most famous role, but she's been around for a long time.
But. Now we get to the next scene where Graham is arriving with all of his stuff that he brings to the house that he had just bought. He immediately finds an intruder in the house. The man is dressed in ragged clothes, has long hair, a long beard, and a hand cart that plays a jingle. The man leaves. Graham watches as the man head towards an empty lot adjacent to his house. Graham, with the help of his friend Chuck, do some remodeling. Chuck really just screws in and locks a door, and fucking Graham just cleans the sink the entire time.
Super proud of that lock, too. But sure. I told Max about this earlier, but it took me an hour into the movie to realize that that's Jimmy Olsen.
That was my first thing.
That was the first thing
I yelled Superman. Out when he popped on the screen. I was like, oh, Jimmy Olsen.
I was trying to place him because I thought they had said maybe like Stand By Me, or maybe I had read something else. But it didn't. Yeah. I didn't put that together. It didn't hit me until you had said that. I was like, yeah. And the fucking Donner and Reeves one.
And he was also in Supergirl. Didn't he show up for Supergirl starring Helen Slater?
I don't want to remember that movie.
I know. Yeah.
It's hard to remember, but
I think she was hot, though.
Yeah, because didn't she rub like coconut stuff on his lips or something?
I don't remember. I hated that movie, but I did watch it because I liked Helen Slater back in the day, and it was a super person movie. But I seem to remember he was the only other person. Oh, because what's her name was in it, too? The gal from Grease 2? I think she was the one who ended up with Jimmy Olsen in the movie. Mm. Like she played like his love interest or something. She was kind of a sidekick. I don't know. That's all I remember. I saw it once. But I think that was the only person they could get from the Donner films. I'm going to call it Donner films because he did film a lot of two.
Graham opens up to Chuck that he'd like a hot tub. Or maybe a lanai if you ever got that sweet promotion to analyst.
I didn't look that up. What's a lanai?
It's like a veranda. Yeah. Like it's just a screened off porch. It's just what they would call it in Hawaii.
You can't. It call doesn't have two to be screened off, but it's like a little. Don't know normally.
Have you ever watched the normal. Golden Girls?
No, never.
They spent all their time on the lanai.
I don't know anything about those biddies.
They were always on the lanai.
They should have called them the golden biddies.
They ate their cheesecake on the lanai. They'd say, hey, take it.
They had cheesecake?
They always ate cheesecake.
Probably farting all over the place.
They'd say, let's have our cheesecake tonight on the lanai.
Is it what they call the golden girls? Because it's in their golden age.
Yeah, the golden years. Like me.
Oh.
Okay. Well, good.
Yeah.
You look good.
We'll get you a sash.
Thanks.
Chuck jokes about Graham getting fired, but Graham is not a fan of that joke. And then he hears something big. Like a squirrel, Graham is cleaning the fuck out of his sink still. Chuck asks Graham if he wants him to stay the night. Graham says no, but he does anyways. Graham has a nightmare about the intruder, and there's a dream sequence, maybe, that shows a hand with open sores trying to enter Graham's house. And Graham awakes to the intruder in his house, stealing the cover plate to his light switch. Meanwhile, Chuck is sound asleep as a shadow falls over him. A pair of hands grab Chuck's neck, startling him awake. It's Graham, who is sleepwalking while mumbling something incoherently. Chuck talks Graham down from his nightmare sleepwalking. They both return to bed. The next shot, Graham is walking back from the grocery store when he decides to investigate the sounds of some belching. Through a gap in the wood fence of the empty lot, Graham spies a homeless man eating something red and meaty. The homeless man's face is sunburnt, which scares Graham. It scares him so much that he drops all the groceries out of his grocery bag onto the sidewalk, and the pasta that he had in there too.
Everything.
Yep. The homeless man takes a can of tuna from the left behind groceries. Graham freaks out, so he dials 911, and the operator asks what the homeless man is doing. Graham replies, "Right now, nothing." So the operator puts him on hold. Then we cut to the exterior where Graham is talking to two police officers who are telling Graham that the homeless man isn't breaking the law, then there's nothing that they can do.
I love how they fucking turn, though.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's so good.
Until Graham says that he has seen him urinating on some bushes.
They're like, public urination?
Yeah, both of them remove their faux bands.
Can't have public urination.
But Graham has to tell them that he hasn't actually seen them. One of the police officers was about to brush it off when the other says, "Well, you know, if we can find a witness, then we can arrest the homeless man." And they're able to arrest the homeless man because they go next door to Mrs. Howell, and then they start talking to her, and Graham goes off, and he's like, "I see him peeing over here, guys.
He's getting ready to pee."
Yeah, I think
he's getting ready. Yeah. I like how he's getting ready to pee.
Yeah. So Graham narcs the dude out. And as the police officers are taking the homeless man away, Graham is trying to hide behind a palm tree. But nobody's ever been successful at hiding behind a palm tree, and the homeless man and Graham make eye contact. Back at Graham's workplace, his boss needs that stress analysis review, and then he is teased with a promotion. Nope. How do you want to be fired? Just kidding. I would never be Graham. I'd be like, I'm fucking out of this goddamn place. I'm not working here for this shit. And then we're back at Graham's home in the evening as he is preparing dinner and reading a note from his girlfriend, Edie. While Graham is drinking some rosé, he spots the homeless man in the empty lot. Graham grabs his binoculars to better see the homeless man eating messily. Graham has had enough. He calls 911 again. On hold, Graham is trying to juggle his phone, a photo, and his binoculars while trying to locate the homeless man. Through forced, I don't know, what is that, vaudeville acting? I don't know, That was a poor job at trying to make me believe that he was trying to juggle all of those things at once. Like, I could do that. You just put it down, set that down.
Yeah, but he was frantic, though. He was so frantic.
Sure. I get it. Did not come across that way to me.
I felt it. Like, it really came through to me that he was, like, having this frazzled moment, and he just didn't know what to do. He's like, I bet he wish she had three hands.
Yeah. He drops the photo, so he bends over to pick it up. And when Graham straightens, the homeless man is staring at Graham through the window, a single pane of glass separating the two. This causes Graham to become startled and slapsticks his way around the kitchen and living room to further keep tabs on the homeless man. Graham tries to call 911 again on his Motorola cell phone, but instead he hangs up. The next morning, or some time later, I'm not sure when, because the time passage is hard to tell in this movie. But Graham has a security company installing alarms, barriers, lights all around the perimeter and on his house. Graham takes Chuck over to where the homeless man lives, where he describes the man to Chuck. I like the way that Bill Paxton was doing it. It's a lot to assume there. Chuck just tells Graham to leave the man alone. Edie has arrived in town, and she is surprised at Graham's house. And then I'm surprised briefly by the polka music that he decides to play as his away music. Edie makes comments about his taste in furniture because it looks seriously like an apartment I've been in.
Yeah.
Like
the cinder block, block shelves.
I knew an individual who had that same exact style of chair, that like weird wood framed, like half dome one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've fallen asleep in something like that.
That's a papasan. That's what they're called.
Really?
Yeah.
I fell asleep in it.
I had one, like, not that long ago, but it was for my patio.
Sure.
Yeah. It's more of an Arizona room, outdoor kind of thing. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it was in my sunroom, and then I think I used it on the patio, too. They're comfortable.
Well, yeah, no, Edie. Mm-hmm. You know who Edie was? She was a Baywatch babe.
Oh, was she?
Babe from Baywatch.
All right. Babe. What was the other show she was on?
I don't know. I saw that she was a Baywatch babe.
That night, Graham dreams again about the homeless man in his house. This time, the homeless man is tickling Graham's feet. Edie wakes Graham up during his sleepwalking.
Oh, no, he moves up. He goes up for the dong.
Did you miss that part? I missed that part.
He starts at the feet and he goes along the leg and then he reaches for the dong. He's in the pants.
Nice.
And like he's just kind of looking at it and I'm like, what the fuck?
I missed that. I was typing. Graham was swear there's a trap door in his closet or somewhere in this house, he believes. So Graham is back at work where his boss introduced him to a new client who is of Hungarian descent. So obviously his boss was like, here's my Hungarian employee. This is where it got really like, I was like, what are they trying to do in this movie right now? Like, are they going to kill the boss? Like, why is this important? Is it this? You only set this up so you could send Graham on his way to the next portion of the story.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't make sense.
No.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. I was like, this is so weird. Now with the surprise day off, Graham is driving home after buying flowers and chocolates when he stops at a busy crime scene. Graham spots a body on a gurney that has a pair of red cat eye eyeglasses. I don't even know if that's what they're called. Mm-hmm. I just was like, what they are. They rest atop a covered body. Graham recognizes the glasses and a hearing device that Mrs. Howler wore. And so he speeds home in his blue Miata worried about Edie. When he arrives to his house, the homeless man is sitting at the kitchen table eating Graham's food. Graham confronts Edie in the shower, who tells Graham that she let the man in to feed him and also to let the man bathe.
Because that's what I would do if there was a terrifyingly filthy man hanging around outside. Because
he's gentle. She's a good judge of character.
Yeah. I might give him a sandwich, but he's not coming in the house. Yeah, and I'm not taking my clothes off with him in the house, too.
Sure.
She was from Silk Stockings.
Oh.
Ah, yes.
Quite a popular show back in the day.
Yeah.
Graham calls the 911 operator or calls 911 again. And the operator sighs and asks, what is it this time, Mr. Krakowski, when he calls. And finally, it only took 30 minutes, but now Ralph Barfus, played by Michael Ironside, and his partner, who you actually don't get to learn his name for like 30 minutes, like, which is nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, okay, well, he must not be important then. But in fact, he's really important for this fucking movie. When asked to explain her side of the incident with Graham and the homeless man, Edie tells Ralph that Graham is just being paranoid. She attests to the gentle nature of the homeless man. Ralph orders Graham to pick up the flowers for Edie. She's sad about the kerfuffle. Graham watches the news program about the murder of Ms. Howler, and there is a new update about the body that is relayed to people watching. The victim was missing some fingers and a thumb, and Graham apologizes to a pretend sleeping Edie.
That was the biggest overshare on news like ever. That was like, come on, it was like trauma news, you know, like. And then they took a shit on her head. He's like, you can't say shit, Barney. Whatever, fuck you.
And then Graham is dreaming again. It's exterior night. The homeless man sits next to his fire in the empty lot. And then it cuts to in some room in Graham's house. And Edie is in dark makeup with curled hair and she's naked. She's moving back and forth as if something pushes her from behind. As a disheveled Graham watches on in horror. This was his best acting part. Like, in everything, this was his best acting.
Well, this is when the entire movie hit the rails.
Yeah, I know.
It's just going fucking, it's just like, this is it.
And then you get a wide shot from Graham's perspective that shows the homeless man having doggy style sex with Edie. And it is pretty gross. Like, it is gross. I would be quite afraid as well. When Graham wakes up from his dream, one of the arms of his glasses has been cut with a pair of garden shears, which is a weird choice of tool to use because they're not meant to cut metal. Edie is calling Graham's name. Then there's a shot of Edie saying the cliche, I'm breaking up with you speech. And Graham is alone in the rain, or just rained. And that was real. Like, that was, like, they had to have been like, this is, we got to do it now.
That's before what I was thinking. I was like, they got rain in Phoenix.
It may not have been summer.
It was filmed probably, that's the thing. Some of the accounts said that it was 100 something degrees during filming. If it was released in May, it's more likely that it wasn't, unless they started filming in September.
Sure.
And you still get a little bit of that. But back then, we cooled off a little bit more. So it would probably be August if they started in August. But it's even said that they filmed this very quickly. So they probably filmed this more like the wintertime. I don't think they did a lot of, there probably wasn't a whole lot of after. I don't know. Unless they filmed it in the summer and sat on it.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, to get that kind of rain and that kind of look.
I intentionally paid attention. I just spent some time looking, and it's like, that road down there is just like it doesn't look dry. And look at the clouds, like those aren't like that drawn in.
I think if they brought in a fire hose, they would not have shown us so much.
Yes,
and they showed us a lot.
Yeah.
So I think that was a true rain, and they probably weren't even. They were probably like, "Let's get out here and film."
Yeah,
you know, we've got some rain.
We're just gonna do this scene right now.
Yeah.
An unknown amount of time later, Graham and Chuck are having lunch. Graham is scared of what is happening in his house. He believes that he could have killed Miss Howler. Chuck wants Graham to seek help. And back at Graham's house, where there is a fork in a saguaro wall decoration, Graham is walking around in his boxers, reading The Animal Within. After having a realization of something, not sure what, he stumbles in his kitchen that is full of food waste. There's a salmon hanging, there's a chicken, a can of gloopy substance, there's a watermelon with a bunch of fucking knives in it, cereal on the counter, and bananas in a coffee pot. Like,
it's bedlam.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Graham is awoken by his phone. It is Ms. Divins, his boss's administrator. Graham is late for work because his alarm was cut. And as he's making his cup of coffee, he smells something new. And using his nose to suss out the smell, it eventually leads him to the basement of his house, uncovering the potential source, the fingers of Miss Howler that were in the heart-shaped chocolate box. And he also stumbles into the homeless man behind a stack of boxes in his basement. The homeless man retreats by way of basement hidden door, only to return to blow a raspberry at Graham. Like, some of this stuff that, dang, I'm like, why those sounds? Like, why?
Because it's playful. It's fun. You know? Makes you feel like you're a kid again.
A large police presence now occupies Graham's house. Chuck tries to help his friend, but Ralph strong-arms him into silence. The police are presuming Graham guilty of Ms. Howler's murder. Graham has a dream about the homeless man killing Graham in his sleep. The doorbell rings. It is late at night. What, pray tell, could this be? Oh, it's the way too horny realtor. They have a wild sex scene.
He has a shotgun, and she says, you hunt?
Yeah.
I was like, that was amazing.
They have a wild sex scene, but it's not sex. It's just wild. They're rolling on the floor. That's all that they're doing.
She had some gross underwear on, too.
It was a very weird scene. The next morning, Graham finds all of his doors and windows, I think, too.
Yeah, like doors and shutters. Yeah, all removed.
Yeah, they've all been removed.
Yeah.
And placed in his room. He also finds a letter from the horny realtor that has a P.S. written in blood from the homeless man. I adore you, Graham. Ralph and Laxon, this is when we fucking finally learn his name, have been surveilling Graham because they got a tip about a body. Ralph motions with his hand and heavily armed police take position outside of Graham's fence. This is when they drill the holes in there and just shove the barrels through without being...
sniper glory holes, what they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the best.
In his boxers and armed with a shotgun, Graham sets off his alarm, which startles him and causes him to fire the shotgun. And this causes the police to open fire in return. The police finally surround Graham, who is bewildered and twitchy. Soon, Graham tries to prove his innocence to Ralph, who is not buying the shtick.
You know the weirdest part when that SWAT team shows up is they're all in these, like, child molester vans with, like, blacked out windows. They weren't, like, SWAT-y vehicles or anything of the sort. Just vans with blacked out windows.
That's probably what they could get for rent. But Laxon rushes over to point out the evidence to the evidence that's in the fridge. It is the head, hands, feet, and realtor sash of Judy Danzig, who was the way too horny realtor.
I think she's just horny enough. I don't know.
Wrong movie, like wrong set.
It's not though. It's perfect.
Graham is then arrested while he is then paraded through a gauntlet of reporters on his way to be booked into jail. Chuck is there on letting him know that Graham's boss will hire the best lawyers. But it's a lie told through a bad disguise, which I don't know why they have that scene in there either. They didn't even have to put it that they were getting him a good lawyer.
Yeah.
Doesn't fucking matter. It could have been a public defender.
Yes, that was...
I think this is the whole point is this movie is like saying fuck you, corporate America.
There's something.
And they're like, they're not going to help you. You could be innocent. They don't care.
Sure. That guy who plays Bill Paxton's boss,
Stuart Parkin.
Yeah. He's been in a lot of stuff and he's never had a major role. It's always been like
he's that character.
A small role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's either a lawyer or the boss.
He's the father. Boss.
Or a random father.
And I think that it was one of those things, they had him, so they wanted to use him.
I'd cast him as a child molester if I did a movie. That's all I know. Looks like.
Because he's been around for...
It's like a toucher. A little touchy kind of guy, you know?
A little touchy. Okay.
A little touchy. Not feelings, just feeler.
So Graham is put on trial, and then it's revealed that Graham has had some past violent encounter with a young woman when his mother is cross-examined by the prosecution. She dies while vehemently supporting his innocence claim. And in a twist, the verdict comes back as not guilty for Graham.
Did you
Don't forget
attention?
The young woman was 4 years old, and yeah, so was he.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yes.
But the bailiff is like beating on her chest.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. That's why I laughed because I was remembering that. I was like, it's fucking save that.
Full, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be funnier if he had the gavel in his hand.
Yeah. It would have been like once again, it was slapstick.
You might
like
as
somebody
well.
From the Brooks producing no, went, side was
after
like,
the first
this is what
30
we're
minutes.
Do here.
Yeah, after well, 30 it was, minutes, it goes off the rails. Like it's just like anything goes. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's the ridiculous, and I like that about the movie. I also did like that the reporters outside the courthouse, unfortunately they didn't use any locals, which would have been better.
Sure.
But they did have a TV5 van, and back then that's what Channel 5 was, TV5. It was an unaffiliated channel back then, like Channel 3 became
before
later.
They did all the swaps.
They swapped all the channels out years ago, but Channel 5 was originally our unaffiliated.
What was that, 94? Like a couple years later, I
yeah,
want to say.
Yeah, it was. Because
that's
weird.
When UPN started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had
and
all the,
CW
the swaps
too?
Were sometime in the mid-90s. And it took me a really long time to figure out what was happening, like to remember what channels everything was on. Yeah. I was very upset with it.
Well, Fox was always on 10, wasn't it?
No, Fox was channel. It was a UPN channel. It was channel 15.
Oh, it was the high one. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, it was a channel 15, and then it because remember Fox didn't come along until later, so it had to be a higher one because we already had 10. 10
well,
was
like
back then. 10 was CBS.
There's only three shows on there. I think in there they were like the good ones. It was like,
well, when it first started, it was only on Sunday nights.
Yeah,
and then they added Monday nights, so it was just Sundays and Mondays.
Because it was Married with Children, and
well, you had it started. You started with Gary Shandling. You had Gary Shandling show, Tracy Ullman, and then you had a series of shows. You had like Married with Children was one of the first. You had Oops, which was a show. You had a Jennifer Aniston sketch comedy show, which was really good. I miss it. Later on, you had the Ben Stiller show, which starred Bob Odenkirk, Janine Garofalo.
Dave Cross
wasn't on that.
Yeah, he was.
He might have had an appearance, but he wasn't a regular. It was
Cross
it was just
was regular.
Not on the Ben Stiller show. You're thinking about
I'm thinking
Mr.
about
show.
Mr. Show.
Yeah, this was just Ben Stiller, Janine Garofalo and
Will Kirk.
Bob. And yeah, it was like a really great lineup back then. You had a lot of shows that they were trying out. You had Duet. Like, they had all these stupid shows they'd try out. They'd last the season, and they'd bring something else in. Ellen DeGeneres had her first show. She was on Duet, which was she was on Open House, which is a spinoff of Duet, which was a...
And I believe that was around the time that the show we talked about, The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
That was a little bit later.
Was it later? Okay. Uh-huh. I love that.
Because this was the late 80s when this was starting. When, Channel 15 started. Fox 15 started in the late 80s.
Okay.
So we had.
I specifically remember just They Are Married with Children, because it's like they'd be like getting ready to watch something, mm-hmm. and they'd be like, get in Fox viewing position, and they had to like have like foil antennas in mm-hmm. their hands and all in weird like positions.
Your channels didn't come in very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had to.
No amplifiers. No.
No.
Couldn't afford them. They were out there, but you couldn't, like, I know my family couldn't afford that.
Well, you didn't know. You had to have that, like, antenna that went, like, 75 mm-hmm. feet in the air to do it.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't have any interference at all.
Yeah, I miss those days.
So, in a weird twist, the verdict comes back as not guilty for Graham. He is innocent not guilty.
I think that was the weirdest charges. Part of the entire movie.
They're like, oh, that poor boy. Like, his mother died. Just died Sympathy. In front of him in court. He's not guilty. The fuck are you talking about?
It was weird because they actually had a lot of evidence. They found
have a lot of evidence.
They found the bodies in his house.
They found the bodies.
Yeah,
that's usually pretty good. That works.
If they wanted to, they could probably find semen in.
Yeah.
The vaginal.
They didn't semen test back in 92, believe me.
Okay. All right.
Well, they did. They swapped. They didn't have a lot of great ways to test.
Well, the DNA testing wasn't as prominent as it is now.
No, they believed that they could you could do like blood types from it, I think, or something like that. Like,
was general DNA.
Yeah, there were very few things you could do, but they still were smart enough to know they needed to swab because they knew something better would be coming.
Yeah.
Again.
Ooh, ba-dum-bum.
There's a shot of a TV that shows the goings on of the reveal of the verdict call, which I think is hilarious. They're like, you know what we're gonna do? We're not gonna actually like pretend that we're the news camera recording this reporter. We're just gonna record that part. And then we're going to play it on a TV, and then we're going to record that TV, that's going to be part of our movie.
Oh, that's amazing, yeah. But this was the time where I want to say, like, you know, like, not, it was TMZ before TMZ was a thing. That's kind of like, you know, like tabloid television.
Sure.
Like, I think really was getting, like, E! Was out there.
We had Current Affair.
So it was kind of prominent,
Weekly.
Yeah.
Everybody or Entertainment cared. Tonight, yeah.
I remember the whole world blew up when fucking Fabio got hit in the face by a pigeon, you know, or a seagull. Was it a seagull?
I don't know.
It was a seagull.
Because it was on like a roller coaster, like on the bay or something like mm-hmm. that.
My favorite part of that scene that they're showing when they're recording, like Graham coming out and then his mother coming out, is her the fucking body slide down the like off the gurney down the stairs and slides like 20 feet past the bottom of the stairs.
That was so sad. Fucking,
it's like what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. It was great.
No, it's because this movie, the budget wasn't big, and they're not doing rewrites. They're just like, fuck it, let's go. Like, hey, we're on the spot. What's a good idea, guys? Who's got one? And the one, the fucking guy with the gaffer is like, hey, what if the body just fucking goes down the stairs over there? What do you think? They're like, yeah, it's great. Let's do it.
The whole reason is because the guys didn't want to carry the body down the stairs in the first place. They're like, wouldn't it be better if instead of us carrying them down, we just dropped her?
Sure. A disappointed Ralph is not going to let Graham get away with Moida. Graham is having another dream about the fire and the homeless man, I guess. I'm not sure. It's sort of ambiguous. It might just be the movie showing us the homeless man.
Yeah.
Then we cut to Graham, who's in his station wagon, and I don't know what freeway it was. I couldn't even tell. That didn't even look like a Phoenix freeway, unless it's so old.
Yeah, that's the way we used to take to go to like Tucson when we were kids.
Okay, all right.
We didn't like have certain freeways yet. You know, sure. Like, certain things weren't there. So you could still go. That was kind of the other way to go.
Yeah, I wasn't even up here yet. We were still down in Tucson.
So. That looks like the way to go to Tucson. It could be that it's a way to go someplace else, but sure. We didn't, you know, there are a lot of ways to go places without getting onto a major highway.
But yeah, Graham's leaving town in his station wagon that's just fucking pouring out oil smoke from the exhaust pipe. He's gonna leave all the drama behind. So he stops at the maybe the first roadside store, hoping to find work. He didn't go that far. He's like, hey, I'm gonna go right outside of town. Mm-hmm. That's how I'll lose everybody.
Looks like a good job here.
He interviews with a visually impaired man named Ray, or X-Ray, the man who is seeking an employee for the roadside gas station. When prompted for a name, Graham tells him, "My name is Jerry Kramer."
Ooh, that's clever.
So I wonder if it's either somebody who's like, "Oh, look what we're doing, Jerry Seinfeld. We're using your name and Kramer's name in here."
Yeah.
And nobody from there probably saw it. Like, don't give a shit.
Did you notice the third thing?
No, what was the third thing?
The diner was Cosmo.
Really?
Where is that from?
Cosmo Kramer is Kramer's name.
That's Kramer's name. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was the biggest show on television.
Yeah,
because
that's what I went to look. I was like, was it even around then?
Oh yeah.
And at that point, it was into like its notoriety.
It was like that. And X-Files, were probably the biggest TV shows.
And what's her name? The girl he ends up with, his girlfriend. His new trailer park girlfriend, she was on two episodes of Seinfeld.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I think she was, I think most people on this were on episodes of the X-Files too.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. While unpacking, Graham is surprised to see the book The Animal Within has made the trip. Dodie, his neighbor, introduces herself by way of cake or salad. I couldn't be sure because
it was cake.
Like, was it because with the name like that, it was like, is that some type of salad?
It was a coconut cake.
Okay. Yeah. Graham has nightmares about the homeless man, which causes him to wake and then hit his head on a shelf above his bed. So then Graham decides that he's going to ask Dodie if she can hold on to the keys to his handcuffs so he doesn't escape. He hopes by doing that, he won't be able to do something that he'll regret or hurt somebody. Dodie gladly accepts. Then Graham is gladly accepting of the handy.
Oh, that's a beach. That's a beach.
Yeah. The way they left it looked like it was just going to be a handy.
That's big girl beach right there. Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't try that hard. He's like, oh, stop. Never mind. I'm good.
Yeah, he seems pretty... He's easily manipulated into those kinds of situations in this movie.
Yeah. And then there's some more unknown amount of time that passes because... Graham's hair is blonde and he wears a mullet now, so who knows? It could have been like a couple weeks, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe
could have been 4 weeks.
Dodie could be like a hairdresser on the side, and she likes to do his hair.
Sure. Nothing wrong with that. While having beers one night, X-Ray decides to tell Graham that Dodie doesn't want to continue their relationship. Mainly because Graham is removing big swaths of cloth from her underwear.
Her great big underwear. Yeah. Didn't they say something about her great big underwear?
I don't recall that.
He's cutting holes in her great big underwear. That's what I like.
Holes. Like how big holes? Like small hole or like the entirety of the underwear? Well, how big is the hole?
I kind of felt
in his opinion, the tasty parts.
I felt like the pickings were rather slim at the trailer park and that she could just live with that.
Sure. She was before. She had said that before. She's like, I just stay inside, watch TV, drink. After Graham realizes that she doesn't want to be with him, he looks wistfully into the night. And in the night, Graham can hear the handcart jingle. The next morning, Graham awakes to see that the handcuffs are broken. And at the exact moment that X-Ray finds his service dog's body hanging from a clothesline, Graham vows to kill the homeless man, and then he proceeds to battle the entire trailer park.
That's when I was surprised to see there were other people who lived there. Sure. Like, where did these people come from? There was like a whole crew of them.
Yep. Graham is able to escape the park alive and drive through a dust storm as the ghosts of Ms. Howler and Judy apparate to torment him. The homeless man appears in the station wagon, which causes Graham to careen off the road to avoid hitting a semi-trailer. Except it was all a dream, and Graham is really sleeping in a parking lot of the roadside diner and gas station.
Cosmo.
Ralph and Laxon have been tracking Graham, which has brought them suspiciously close to Graham's location out of either sheer luck or just stupidity. Who knows? But Ralph wants chili. That's a bad call. You don't have chili while you're traveling. Graham is filling up at the pump when he spots something out of place. In the bed of the station wagon, he finds the handcart of the homeless man. And inside the handcart, there is a book that catalogs in great detail the tormenting of Graham Krakowski, in addition to the identity of the homeless man, Dr. Stanley Memelreich, author of the book, The Animal Within. And he is also in the bed of the station wagon. I don't know how he missed him while looking through it while being right next to the spot that he was in the station wagon bed. It's like,
how do you not smell him?
Yes. In the car that's, with you.
That's got to be a potent guy.
Yes. So the homeless man pops out of the station wagon, lights a road flare, tosses it into the station wagon. The cloud of smoke from the burning car seats obscures the escape of the homeless man, except the jingle can still be heard. Graham vows to end it, finally. After receiving some just punishment, Ralph and Laxon are directed to the exploding station wagon they are trying to locate. Graham tracks the homeless man to a roadside haunted mine.
Oh, of course.
Yep, of course. You always got to go there. After a near miss from a speeding mine cart, Graham follows the homeless man further into the haunted mine, and a always very scary iguana drops down.
It's the flying cat situation, but they used an iguana.
Oh, so I like to call this one an iguana bomb.
Yeah. Graham insults the doctor's experiments, and the homeless man says, "Nah." This is where the iguana drops from the ceiling. But I like that. I like that interaction. Mm-hmm. Like your experiments suck. No, they made you a better person, didn't they? Like, no. And then a fake ceiling collapses on Graham. Chasing the homeless man up a flight of stairs into a storage room for costumes, Graham is now face to face with the homeless man. The homeless man monologues about his experiment that he carried out on Graham. The pair battle it out until Graham chokes the homeless man. It's like really like 5 seconds long. Like, I thought it was going to be longer. It's like, oh no, that was easy. Never mind. And Ralph is able to catch Graham in the act of killing the homeless man. But instead of arresting him, Ralph wants to shoot Graham. And just before that happened, the homeless man stabs Ralph with the three-legged chair. He then proceeds to whip Ralph around side to side, trying to make Ralph shoot Graham. This is hilarious because it's just like, whoa.
I think when he stabbed him with a stool, I think they were trying to call him a stool pigeon, but
I don't know.
It really doesn't make complete sense.
No.
No.
See?
Because it was a chair.
It was a stool.
Didn't it have a back on it?
I thought it did, but
we'll have to rewatch the movie in its entirety to find out.
Graham dodges out of the way and is able to pick up the camera that the homeless man had been holding. Snap goes the Polaroid. The homeless man doesn't like that Graham has a picture, and now Laxon arrives, holding them both at gunpoint. The developed Polaroid is seen by Laxon, spurring the homeless man to attack. Like, I love the way that the photo just found. It's like, I'm like, there you go. Laxon's like, oh, fully developed on my foot. Now I know. Boom, boom. But Laxon unloads his clip into the homeless man, which sends him tumbling off the balcony and into a bed 20 feet below of prickly pear cacti. Graham is informed about the rewards for the capture of the homeless man in 5 State. It'll be a nice bundle, says the police officer, as he watches the still-breathing homeless man be loaded into an ambulance. Cut to summer with Seagulls, where a professional realtor hands Graham the keys to his new house. Checking out
doesn't
his
doesn't have sex with them.
No, that's checking out his new kitchen sink, a drip echoes in rhythm to the handcart jingle as Dutch camera angles are used to suggest that he is still not okay. And the homeless man cackles as the movie cuts to black. Roll credits.
The end.
I laughed quite a bit. Like, it, mm-hmm. it, It was genuinely funny in those mm-hmm. moments that were hilarious.
Yeah, it's by no means a great movie or even a good movie.
No.
But it was a fun movie to watch. Yeah. I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch it again.
Nope.
I could see if I still had cable or something and it was just on one day, I might watch a little bit of it. I'm probably not going to sit through it. It's not going to keep me there. I'm probably going to be like, oh, I was supposed to go to the store. I'm going to go ahead and do that. It's not going to be like, I can do that later. I've got to finish this.
Yeah.
If it had
more boobs in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bush, a little 80s bush.
I could do without that, but.
Just a little, you know.
I just already found so much unappetizing about it. I was eating dinner while I watched this. I kind of forgot how gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was eating a bean burrito, which is not what you want to eat.
No. That's not the right texture consistency thing to eat during this movie.
It's absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have been like, what is it? A blue cheese something.
That smell and flavor.
Yeah. That would be terrible. Like, or some tuna. I could have had a tuna sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just terrible in general. So yeah. You know.
Yeah.
That's probably how he lost his eye, because he got tuna in there.
Tuna in there.
His photo, like his newspaper clippings, even had him with an eye patch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think it said anything.
They showed They showed a picture.
Sure,
without,
That's right.
But yeah, there was a. It was a like a transgression, not a transgression, but a.
You know, time passage.
Yeah, sure.
Progression.
Progression. Yeah. Not trans, because he's just a man the whole time.
Yep, that is true. So Megs, you.
The whole orchestra? No, I'm just
kidding. So you feel good about this movie?
I feel okay about this movie.
Okay.
I'm not as embarrassed as I thought I was going to be.
Sure, sure.
I thought that I was going to have a lot more regret in this choice. I enjoyed what I watched. I thought it was fun. It was a fun, stupid movie. It was a fun, stupid movie.
Yes. You give this movie a rating out of 5. What is it?
Ooh, I would have to give it. I don't know. 2 fingers and a thumb.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So 3 altogether. Yeah. And that's only for the stupid. It was just so much stupid fun.
Sure.
It kept me amused and entertained for the whatever it was hour and half that I watched this movie.
Yep. It was a tight 90, though. They probably could have shaved 10 minutes off of it.
Yeah.
Josh, how are you feeling about this movie? And
I'd never seen it before. Interesting, you know. It does have some stupid fun parts, of course, as has been said. Sure. Yeah, I'll never watch this thing again. I will watch a portion of it just to like satisfy, like, is that what happened right there? But like there's a lot going on there. I think that like even like because the dripping, I feel like that was part of his dream thing that also put him into the sleepwalking.
Okay,
like it's almost subliminal.
Okay,
there's a lot of subliminal and also auditory like cues. That can cause like, you know, that kind of stuff to happen. But I don't know. I didn't write the fucking movie.
No, you did not.
I'm just fucking sitting here talking about it. But I would give this 2 terribly bad makeup jobs out of 5, because there were some really bad makeup jobs in this movie. Bill Paxton looked like shit half the time. I feel like they just grayed him, you know, sometimes. And then
something like there were some times I was like, that's a little heavy makeup. Like they had put some heavy makeup on him in some of the brighter scenes.
Like what the fuck happened to the doctor guy? Like what is that? He's all bubbly everywhere. Like is he a fire victim?
That's from the sun.
I've seen lots of homeless people that has not happened to. Okay, they become stronger and more fucking resilient.
He didn't have fentanyl back then. He was doing
even
it,
without the fentanyl.
He was doing it on his own.
No, they did it. It's still, it's been forever. Yeah, I met a guy. He told me he had Bill Clinton sandals, and he had the blackest feet I've ever seen in my life. This white guy, and we tried to buy the sandals off him because we were like, "Those are original Clintons." He's like, "Yeah, Bill Clinton sandals is the greatest."
I don't want you touching people's sandals. That's gross.
This was like so long ago, like 1996 or seven or eight. Mm. Yeah, so shortly ago. After this movie came out.
Yeah, yeah, shortly, mm-hmm.
shortly, within 6 years. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I was still as tall as I am now, so, you know, whatever.
There you go. There you go.
Just, you know. But, yeah, two very, very just shitty. Like, they cut corners on that part. I think they put everything into working on fucking the homeless guy.
Yeah.
The vagrant.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah, outside of that, there really wasn't a whole lot of special effects type of stuff.
No,
like,
not really.
Well, The
little blood, little this and that for the heads and whatnot, but it's, you know.
Yeah, not overall, not, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I had fun watching it. I love the campiness and parts of it and the slapstick because it just doesn't make sense and it's hilarious. It just makes it that unexpected, and you're like, oh, that's a good laugh. That's a good slapstick. Good job. I'm gonna give this movie. I'm gonna have to go with Josh. I'm giving it two out of five hand carts that have a jingle.
I thought you were gonna say hand
carts. In a secret compartment.
And secret compartment. Well, now that'll bring us to our next segment, which is the next choice. In our rotation, and it belongs to Josh. Josh, did you have a movie in mind that is with Michael Ironside?
So I had multiple, but the one that really I feel like is the quintessential Michael Ironside movie has to be Scanners.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny enough, I haven't even watched the fucking thing, but I've heard so much. I've worked at a video store. I might even have watched it, but I'm not aware.
Sure.
Because I remember the fucking the yawning mouth, you know, and then the fucking like brains blowing up and shit like that. Well, whether I saw that in a scene or what it was, I don't recall. But I know he has a lot more to do with it than anything else you can possibly find out there. Honestly.
Oh yeah, next to he's television stuff, but that's rare.
Even that, like, yeah, it's like. So yeah, I want to say Scanners because I feel like it needs to be done.
Good call, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Nice. Very good.
Is that what's that available on?
Let me find out because I did not do that.
Yeah, let's look. Let's have a little look see here. Ooh, beep boop beep beep ba doop boop. Finding out from computer machines. And just know if you're listening to this at a later date, this might not be correct. But as of now, on the date that this is coming out, this is what this will be available on. Does Michael Ironside do voices at all? That'd be great.
That would be great.
He just does Ironside.
I think he just does crook and
grumbly,
Ironside.
Grumbly, pissed off.
So for those who do have a subscription to Max, it's there.
It's on the Max.
I believe it looks like if you have a. Max. Oh yeah, it looks like Max if you have it. Otherwise, it is out to rent on Apple. Looked like it was also. On YouTube to rent. You could probably rent it as well through Amazon if you don't have a subscription. Yep, you can. You can rent it on there. So yeah, if you wanna check that out, watch that and you know, listen to it next time. Yeah. That'll bring us to what we like to call Give Me the Juice.
Give Me the Juice.
Give Me the Juice.
Which is, you know, stuff that we've been watching, reading, playing, or anticipating any of those things. Megs, what do you have?
Well, I recently watched a movie called Dinner in America.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of it. I came across it on, it came up on my feed, I think a review of it. So I decided to watch it. It is a movie that It's a few years old. That's why I was a little surprised I'd never heard of it. It came out in 2020, but it stars Kyle Gallner, Leah Thompson makes an appearance, and Mary Lynn Rice Cub, Gail the Snail. I think some reviewer called it a punk rock Napoleon Dynamite. I wouldn't go that far. I liked it. I thought it was a fun movie. It has that kind of 80s feel, but it's not the 80s. I thought the female lead was miscast. I thought she overdid the character and played it wrong. She did what Robert Downey Jr. told Ben Stiller he should not have done in Tropic Thunder.
Full retard.
She went full retard.
Yeah.
It was a little too much. I think she was just supposed to be a social outcast, not a fully retarded person.
Yeah.
But which makes you uncomfortable when they have the sex scenes. But yeah, she
tweets her own. Tweets her own.
She's a stage actress, so I think she's a little bit used to doing a little more emoting. You need the audience to see what you're doing up there on stage. I don't think she realized there's a camera right in front of her face, and we didn't need that. But other than that, it's a fun movie to watch. I love Kyle Gallner. I like what he's doing. Keep it up, Kyle. Everything he's done so far is pretty good.
Okay.
I'm not, the director is Adam Ramier. I'm not really that familiar with him. I really didn't look into him. But other than that, check it out.
Okay. Nice. Very cool.
I think it was on Netflix, maybe Hulu. I don't remember.
Okay. Josh, how about yourself?
So I got two small ones today. I started watching about a week ago. I started watching The Only Murders in Our Building. Only Murders in the Building. The show's fun, you know. I love Martin.
Mm-hmm.
They're always great, you know. But the Gomez, my God. Dude,
it's a lot.
Yeah. Why? Who thinks this is a great idea? Like, I don't understand.
No.
Well, it's in season 5 or something like that.
Yeah, but she's terrible.
I had to give
it's
it
like,
up.
It's like a why bit because you of know, it's like the NFL right now, how everybody's like, "Oh, fucking Taylor Swift goes to games. Watch this." You know, yeah. But anyways, that's just I enjoyed the first season. I only watched the first half of the second, maybe. I don't know. I think I fell asleep. But my other one is because it's was Latin Spanish Heritage Month or whatever.
Okay.
I watched Sicario. I've seen this before. I like this movie a lot.
Yeah.
Fucking what's her name? It's just so fucking bitchy and stupid in it. It's like, kill the cartel guys. Are you fucking serious? Oh shit. Let's not put that out there.
I'll bleep it.
Take the whole thing out. That one kid, they just straight murdered him.
I'll bleep it. You don't have to worry about it.
Anyways, go for back from the beginning. And I watched Sicario. Great movie. What's Brolin's kind of side? You know, he's fine. He plays that, like, you know, the spook.
Yeah.
And it's great. But, like, overall, that movie just, like, has a lot of powerful scenes. You know what I mean?
The one thing I didn't like was when they tried to show me somewhere outside of Phoenix. I was like, that's not outside of Phoenix.
Like, Chandler.
I know. I grew up there. I was like, yeah. That's not Chandler.
There's a scene that's supposed to be Chandler, but this Chandler, is like probably, this is a halfway to fucking Tucson, like some random little area. It's probably like the smallest ounce of Chandler, if anything.
Sure.
But because what do you call that area? It's just fucking, you know, Mexican walkabout or something. You can keep that in. But anyways, no, like I try to find like Desperado because I do like that movie.
Yeah.
You know, it has a lot of like, for it being like a shoot 'em up movie, that's really fun. But I sat on Sicario because it's like, it's, I don't know, it's just, there's some good performances in there. I'll say that, you know, like mm-hmm. It's powerful shit. So
yeah. And Denis Villeneuve or whatever is the guy who directed that.
Yeah.
And which is a very different film if you go out and watch some of his other ones, like Prisoners, Dune, and what was before? Arrival.
Charlie and the Arrival with Charlie
not with
Sheen?
Charlie Sheen, oh, but man. Or wait, is that Arrival or The Arrival? Because it's one of the two.
One's The Arrival, one's Arrival.
The one with Amy Adams, and it's
that
about
one's, that one's Arrival.
Okay,
or
The
Arrival
is with Charlie
one,
Sheen,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's the backward leg aliens.
Yeah, that's.
And he did,
I had nightmares from that.
He did
because their legs were backwards.
Yes.
Blade Runner 2049 as well.
That's right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, it's very different movie. Like, you watch that and you're like, he directed that movie and then did all this stuff. It's very, very different, but
yeah,
he did a great job.
Yeah,
he did a very great job at it, because it's still all about the human story in there, regardless. Like fucking Benicio's character, his only motivation is to get to the end so he can murder the motherfucker who did the shit to him. It was great. It was a very great movie.
And then I try to put on what's called American Sicario. That was not as good. It's like Danny Trejo and some randoms. I was like, oh, we could do without this.
Have you seen the second Sicario? Like,
I was trying to find that one, but it wasn't. It said it was available on something, but then it wasn't. So, and I was running short on time, but I was like, put this piece of shit on and see what happens. And it was bad. So, yeah, American Sicario. You can skip that one.
That's why I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and Sicario just means hitman. That's all it means.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the second one is cool. I've seen the second one. It's good.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. But yeah, that was me. That's what I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just finished a series on Apple TV called Dark Matter.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a Joel Edgerton and then Jennifer Connelly in it. Is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ass to ass.
Yeah, yeah.
From Career Opportunities.
Labyrinth Girl.
I love everybody's opinion on that. Labyrinth Girl, Career Opportunities, ass to ass.
Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, exactly. I just, you know when someone says ass to ass.
I know.
You know exactly what it is you know anything about movies.
I don't have Apple. Is it worth?
If you like hard sci-fi, like it's hard sci-fi, but it's. It's also very
not just
visual.
That though.
It's visual. It's finally putting something that's been talked about that's sort of not even imaginable to something that's all right.
Dark Matter. Yeah.
Enough to like be like, okay, I could see how this is possible. Premise is really fucking great. It's I slept on it, watched the first episode, and was like, oh shit. And then I fucking binged it.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to them doing more of it.
I like Joel Edgerton.
I'm not advertising the Apple stuff because I'm not really a big Apple fan in general, but they do put some pretty good products out as far as their streaming stuff.
And
if you haven't, you got to watch The Lasso. Was amazing.
Oh, yeah. I do really want to watch
Ted Lasso. It is really fucking good.
And the new one, isn't that available on Apple also?
The Vince Vaughn,
which is also made by
made
by the same.
Yeah, like that. The price point for Apple is actually pretty cheap compared to some of the other stuff. It's not a huge amount of stuff that they have.
Yeah,
but there's
a lot
more,
of movies on there too.
There's
though.
More good than there is bad.
We just have so much streaming already. It's
yes, and I get that. And I understand that. But. And then something that I am looking forward to, I know, very cliche because of the times, but I'm looking forward to Agatha All Along, which comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that and to see how they carry
Disney
Plus that story and arc.
That and also the penguin stuff.
Oh, that's right too. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the
I'm
penguin.
Excited about that.
Yeah, that's right. That
that
those two
transformation. They occurred like almost the same day.
Yeah.
But that transformation in the penguin for Colin Farrell is ridiculous. Like
yeah.
They did such a good job with that. And he's such a good actor that you can't even fucking get his fucking what is he Irish? What the fuck
he's
is
Irish.
He?
Yeah, yeah.
That Irish accent disappears. He's probably one of the best at it, honestly. Because you have the ones that can do like I'm doing a little bit of a Southern, you know.
Yeah.
And hide it. But I think he's one of the best at like just like hiding the fuck out of that accent.
Yeah.
Like, in my opinion.
I think there are a lot of good ones, but there are the ones whose voices, either they change their voices, like Rachel Weisz.
Oh,
she goes kind of whiny when she does an American accent. It gets kind of like that. It's very strange. It's not an accent. It's an affect that she picks up. It's very strange.
Oh, and I got. Oh, this is just one more for people. Sorry, I don't mean.
No, go for it.
I got
go
all the juice. I like to binge shows, so I watched all the Mummy movies.
Oh, nice.
And the smoke show that is Rachel Weisz is insane during those. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. Uh-huh. Like, it is like, what? Is that. She's not a smoke show? She's fucking hot as fucking those things.
Oh, I know. I've just never seen these movies that you're speaking of.
Oh, well, you know, you don't.
I know who's in them. I know what they're about. I've never had any. I never wanted to watch
The Scorpion King is where it's like.
She's not in that.
The second one.
No, that's just called The Mummy 2.
Oh, I thought it was The Scorpion King.
But the Scorpion King
is
the
third
movie.
One. That's the third
that's
one.
That's technically the third one, but it's not. That's just The Rock as the Scorpion King.
That's right. It's the return.
The third one is Jet Li, and he's a fucking.
No, oh, okay.
He's the emperor with the mud soldiers or whatever.
Okay.
But I watched all those.
Oh, it's Jet. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. The movie with The Rock is the Scorpion.
Yeah, and then they bring a kid into it. That just ruined it. Anyways. But but Rachel Weisz.
I love Rachel Weisz. I think she's beautiful. Yeah. I just don't like her American accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we're watching and watching. That's what we're watching.
Yeah,
that's what we're watching now.
Players,
Josh, I do not have anything for you to read.
What
no reviews.
Cowards.
Ooh. Yeah.
Cowards.
Well, thank you for listening. As I've said before, you can leave a comment on Spotify. Anything that you review or leave a comment on will be read by Josh and. You know, Josh will still be making songs. He still hasn't got anything to make any songs about.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah. So, yeah, rate us or follow us and wherever platform that you choose to listen to us on. You can follow us on Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour. You can visit our website where you can listen to episodes there. At the amateurmoviereviewhour.com. And if you feel so frisky or wily, you can email us at the amateurmoviereviewhour@gmail.com.
And also, if you have any topics that you would like to hear and add to our list, feel free to drop those in there too.
Yeah, we're open to suggestions. This isn't a closed suggestion box. If you have something that you'd like to see us do or have a genre suggestion, go ahead and throw us a line. We'll be happy to do it. Thanks for listening. I'm Trevor. Check you later.
Till next time.
Goodbye.